Blog Talk Radio.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, some of us will probably catch it on TV with chicken hanging from our mouths. You'll know it's revolution because there won't be no commercial. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
Preacher pimps are gonna split the scene with the communion wine stuck in their back pockets. Faggots won't be so funny then, and all the junkies will quit their nod and wake up when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, transit cops will be crushed by the trains after losing their guns, and blood will run through the streets of Harlem, drowning anything without substance. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. I hope pearly white teeth fall off the mouths that speak of revolution without reference. The course of revolution is 360 degrees. Understand the cycle that never ends. Understand the beginning to be the end. And nothing is in between but space and time that I make or you make to relate or not to relate to the world outside my mind, your mind. Speak not of revolution until you are willing to eat rats to survive. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes, guns and rifles will be taking the place of poems and essays. Black cultural centers will be forts supplying the revolutionaries with food and arms when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, white death will fall off the walls of museums and churches, breaking the lie that enslaved our mothers. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jesus Christ is going to be standing on the corner of Lenox Avenue and 125th Street, trying to catch the first gypsy cab out of Harlem when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jew merchants will give away monster balls and gefilte fish to anyone they see with an afro. Frank Stiffen will give away the Apollo to the first person he sees wearing a blue dashiki. When the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
afros are going to be trying to straighten their heads, and straighten heads are going to be trying to wear afros. When the revolution comes, when the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes. But until then, you know, and I know, niggas will party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit.
Liberation of oppressed people in the United States has to do not with climbing up some ladder to success, not for asking to be just like Rockefeller or just like DuPont or just like Ford, because that would only continue the oppression and exploitation of oppressed people in the United States, and specifically African people born and raised in the United States. Socialism is an integral part of building social justice on this planet. The condition of my people, my history, was very much connected with other oppressed people, and I began to see that the same foot that was on the necks of the Vietnamese people, that was on the necks of all oppressed people on the planet, was the same foot that was on my neck. And so I began to understand that imperialism has to go. It is a poison that is killing people all over this world. The priorities of this planet have to be completely changed. And instead of profits, instead of policies that destroy the earth, that destroy the water, that destroy human beings, I believe a policy that protects people, that makes people live in a community, a world community, that's what I believe. That's my basic political commitment.
When we talk about capitalism, who are the capitalists? As if we understand that there are only a few people who own and control the means of production in the society, then we begin to understand that there are a few capitalists. And these capitalists exploit everybody because everybody works for them. Everybody sells their labor to them. It is by selling your labor to a capitalist that he's really able to exploit you. Instead of going through theories, let me give some direct example. Let's say that I'm a capitalist. And let's say that I sell shirts. I sell shirts. I sell shirts. I have a shirt factory. Let's say this is my factory. I own it. The machinery. I have a place where I get cotton. Now, I own it. I'm the capitalist. Let's say you are my workers. You are my workers. You don't know me. You never see me. You see my lackeys, you know, maybe my foreman, but you never see me. Now, Let's say it costs me 50 cents for cotton for every shirt I make. And let's say it costs me 50 cents for upkeep of my machinery. That's a dollar. And let's suppose I pay you a dollar for every shirt you make. That means it costs me $2 to get a shirt, labor included, your labor. I pay you for making the shirt. Now, when I sell the shirt, being a capitalist, and you must know something about capitalism, very important, the sole motivating force in a capitalist society is profit. Profit. That is the sole motivating force. Profit. Get money. Get it. Get it as fast as you can. Get it any way you can, but get it. Just get it. Just get it. And even in the African community, it affects us here in this country because Africans, those of us living in America, those of us born in America, we are imbued with the philosophy of capitalism, and sometimes we don't even recognize it. Thus, you find brothers and sisters even selling dope to their brothers and sisters to make money. Again, because we're imbued with the philosophy of get some money. Ain't nothing wrong to kill for money. Hell, your country is napalming for money. You can certainly kill for some money. All right, just get it. Just get it. It's the overall philosophy. When we talk about revolution, we must talk about changing values. We must talk about changing values, and we must understand these values. To the shirt factory. I've not forgotten. I'm just going to tie it in. I'll tie it in for you. You will see, you must look under the shirt factory, too. You must look for spiraling economy. That's very important, spiraling economy. I sell the shirt for $5. I don't do anything. You're the one who makes the shirt. I'm exploiting your labor. You toil, you sweat, I get the fruit. That's right, I get it. But you grow it, you plant it by the sweat of your brow. I get it. I sell the shirt for $5. I am exploiting your labor. I really am exploiting your labor. I mean, even when you want a shirt, hey, you got to come to my store and buy the shirt for $5. Hey, I really am exploiting you. Now, you're workers, you're in a factory, so you begin to get social consciousness. Yes, you do. Marx talks about this. Because you're working together, you see the socialized process, the laboring process, and you're able to see clearly how you're being exploited. So you get together, and you start talking about, we want more money. You tell my foreman we want more money. So the foreman comes to see me. He says, the workers say they want more money. Later for them. Keep them working, man. So he comes back, no raise. You all work, but you all get a little bit more agitated, you know, because it's scientific. The pressure rises, and as the pressure rises, the consciousness must rise. It's scientific. It can't be stopped. That's why revolution can't be stopped. Then you say, hey, look here. We're going to strike. So the foreman comes back and says, hey, they say they're going to strike. I say, oh, let them strike, man. And sure enough, you all strike. Yeah, y'all strike on me. Now, when you strike, of course, my machinery stops. I ain't making no money. So after a while, I call my foreman. I said, what do they want? He says, well, they said they want $1.50 more a shirt. They want 50 cents more a shirt. So I said, okay, let them have it. So I'll bring you back. You happy? I pay you $1.50 more. Right, so it now costs me $2.50 to make a shirt. It costs me $2.50 to make a shirt. Before, it cost me $2. I was selling it for $5. But hey, look here. I can't go out there and keep selling it for $5. Hey, how am I going to do that? I'm going to lose profit. And look here. Since the sole motivating force in a capitalist system is profit, ain't no need for me to come and sell it for $5.50. Hey, no. Next time you see that shirt on the market, it's going to cost you $7.50. Right. Right. And that's what's known as the spiraling economy, because profit is what about wages go up into demands of the workers and prices rocket. Wages go up, prices rocket. And it keeps going and going and going until it's got to blow the top. It's scientifically real. That's why Nixon is talking about freezing wages and freezing prices. He's stupid. You got to freeze capitalism, Nixon. Freeze capitalism. That's the problem. That's the problem. Yes, that's the problem. You must understand these concepts, because once you begin to understand them and master them, you will see the inevitability of revolution. Not only the inevitability of revolution, but you will see the inevitability of victory for the struggling masses around the world once you understand the scientific principles of revolution. Once you understand it.
The Black Panther Party, that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletariat. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the pastors are doing. That's what the pastors are doing all over the world.
As I get a little older, I realize life is perspective. And my perspective may differ from yours. I want to say thank you to everyone that's been down with me. All my fans, all my beautiful fans. Anyone who's ever gave me a lesson. All my people.
I come from a generation of pain where murder is minor. Rebellious and more jealous, a chip you for designer. Belt buckles and cloud overzealous and prone to violence. Make the wrong turn, be a will of the will alignment. Residue burn, mist of the inner city. Miscommunication to keep homo detector busy. No protection is risky, desensitized. I vandalize pain, covered up and camouflage. Get used to hearing arsenal rain. Analyze, risk your life, take the charge. Homies, don't fuck your baby mama once you hit the yard. That's culture, 23-hour lockdown. Then somebody calls that your little nephew was shot down. The culture involved. I done seen niggas do 17, hit the halfway house, get out and get his brains blown out, looking to buy some weed, car washes played out, new GoFundMe accounts to proceed, a brand new victim, a shatter those dreams, the culture. To let y'all know what a nigga look like in a bulletproof rover. In my mama's sofa was a doodle popper. Hair trigger, walk up closer. Ain't no photoshopping. Friends bipolar, grab you by your pocket. No option if you froze up, I always play the offense. Niggas going to work and selling work, late for work. Working late, praying for work, but he on paperwork. That's the culture, point the finger, promote ya. Remote location, witness protection, they gon' hold ya. The streets got me fucked up, y'all can miss me. I wanna represent for us. New revolution, what's up and moving? I'm in Argentina, wiping my tears, full of confusion. Water in between us, another peer's been executed. History repeats again, make amends, then find a nigga with the same skin to do it. But that's the culture, crack a bottle, hard to deal with the pain. We are sober, by tomorrow, we forget the remains. We start over, that's the problem, our foundation was trained to accept whatever follows. Dehumanized, insensitive, scrutinized, the way we live for you and I. Enemy shook my hand, I can promise I'll meet you. In a land where no equal is your equal, never say I ain't told ya. Nah, in a land where hurt people hurt more people, fuck calling it culture. Celebrate new life when it come back around. The purpose is in the lessons we learning now. Sacrifice personal gain over everything just to see the next generation better than ours. I wasn't perfect, the skin I was in that truly suffered. Temptation and patience, everything that the body nurtures. I felt the good, I felt the bad, and I felt the worry. But all in all, my productivity has stayed urgent. Face your fears, always knew that I would make it here. Where the energy is magnified and persevered. Consciousness is synchronized and crystal clear. Euphoria is glorified and made his. Reflecting on my life and what I done. Paid dues, made rules change out of love. The same views made schools change curriculums. But didn't change me staring down the barrel of that gun. Should I feel resentful, I didn't see my full potential? Should I feel regret about the good that I was into? Everything is everything, this ain't coincidental. I woke up that morning with more heart to give you. As I bleed through the speakers, feel my presence. To my brother, to my kids, I'm in heaven. To my mother, to my sis, I'm in heaven. To my father, to my wife, I am serious, this is heaven. To my friends, make sure you count them blessings. To my fans, make sure you make them investments. And to the killer that spared up my demise, I forgive you, just know your soul's in question. I seen the pain in your pupil when that trigger had squeezed. And though you did me gruesome, I was surely relieved. I completed my mission, wasn't ready to leave, but fulfilled my days, my creator was pleased. I can't stress how I love y'all. I don't need to be in flesh just to hug y'all. The memories recollect just because y'all. Celebrate me with respect, the unity we protect is above all. And Sam, I be watching over you. Make sure my kids watch all my interviews. Make sure you live out our dreams we produce. Keep that genius in your brain on the move. And to my neighborhood, let the good prevail. Make sure them babies and the leaders out of jail. Live for salvation when troubles get real. Cause you can't help the world until you help yourself. And I can't blame the hood the day that I was killed. You had to see it, that's the only way to feel. And though my physical won't reap the benefits, the energy they carry on admit still, I want you.
Yo, turn this motherfucking shit up.
Recognition and respect as human beings much faster than you and I. Just 10 years ago on the African continent, our people were colonized. They were suffering all forms of colonization, oppression, exploitation, degradation, humiliation, discrimination, and every other kind of nation. And in a short time, they have gained more independence, more recognition, more respect as human beings than you and I have. And you and I live in a country which is supposed to be the citadel of education, freedom, justice, democracy, and all of those other pretty sounding words. We want freedom by any means necessary. We want justice by any means necessary. We want equality by any means necessary. We don't feel that in 1964, living in a country that is supposedly based upon freedom and supposedly the leader of the free world, we don't think that we should have to sit around and wait for some segregationist congressmen and senators and a president from Texas in Washington, D.C. to make up their mind that our people are due now some degree of civil rights. No, we want it now or we don't think anybody should have it.
I got loyalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though ambition flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, this born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, with Yoshi, a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that puts the kids to bed. This that I got realness, I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again, like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound that engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tire skirt the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA.
Of the 60s. Tupac Shakur, born out of the spirit of the revolution of the 60s. Tupac Shakur, fire in his bones. Huh? Boldness and rebellion in his blood. Born from his beautiful bowl. Black Panther mama, a Fanny, sitting in the jail cell, a revolutionary woman carrying the fruit of life, mocking the child in her womb, mocking the child with rebellion, mocking the child with insurrection, mocking the child with a spirit to not go along with what's been going on. When you got a generation like that, you've got to work with them. You've got to mold them and shape them and fashion them
to our program for the future.
Economy right now, it's extremely supporting of the president and his policy.
FBI scientists have found chemical traces consistent with a bomb or a missile on a piece of wreckage. Police using clubs and tear gas against demonstrators.
So-and-so and a white fascist. Like they said, you're getting some of your own medicine.
You can't fool all the people all of the time, but if you fool the right one, then the rest will fall behind. Tell me who's got control of your mind, your worldview. Is it the news or the movie you taking your girl to? Know what I'm saying, cause I'm from Sam. Got a plan, if you examine what they telling us, then you will understand what they planting in the seeds of the next generation. Feeding our children miseducation. No one knows if there's UFOs or any life on Mars, or what they doing when they up in the stars, because I don't believe a word of what the president said. He's filling our heads with lies, gotta hypnotize when he be speaking in cold words about crime and poverty, drugs, welfare, prisons, guns, and robbery. It really means us, there's no excuse for the slander, but what's good for the goose is still good for the gander, see?
I don't believe Bob Marley got me cancer. 31 years ago, I would've been a panther. They killed Huey because they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news is propaganda. I don't want no computer chip in my arm. I don't wanna die by a nuclear bomb. I say we all rush the Pentagon, pull out guns and grab the intercom. My first words would be, I believe man made God out of ignorance and fear. If God made man, then why the hell would he put us here? I thought he supposed to be the all-loving, the same God who let Hitler put the Jews in the ovens. We don't fall for the regular shit. They try to feed us all this half-ass leadership, flipping position. They turn politician and shut the hell up and follow tradition. Boy, your TV screen is telling lies to your vision. Every channel got the brainwash cop shit to watch, running up in niggas' cribs claiming that they earned shots. It's a plot, but Buster, can you tell me who's greedier? The big corporations, the pigs or the media? Sign of the times, terrorism on the rise, commercial airplanes falling out the skies like flies. Make me wonder what secrets went down with Ron Brown, who burned the churches to the ground with no evidence found. It's not coincidence, it's been too many steady incidents. It could have been the Klan who put that bomb at the Olympics, but it probably was the FBI. Deep at the core, cause if they make us all panic, they can start martial law. I don't believe Bob Marley got some cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. They killed Huey because they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news, propaganda. I don't believe Bob Marley got some cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. You killed Huey because you knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news, motherfucking propaganda.
Better than most groups understand the system, and with this realization, we attempted to form a strong political base based in the community with the only strength that we have, and that's the strength of a potentially destructive force if we don't get freedom.
Black power, black power, black power, black power, family. You're tuned into In Defense of the People's weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chairman, Nat Turner, your engineer on the ones and twos, National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina Oshun. Also, we want to give a special shout-out to the Uhuru Media PE Mix by Brother Cassius Sadiq, Black Power Comrade, for the dope mix. Calling every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, 845-277-9266. Again, that's 845-277-9266. You can always press number one to participate. This is the People's Radio. Tonight's topic, black economics. We're going to go ahead and open the lines right now for our host, People's Political Party National Chairman, Brother Nat Turner. Black power, can you hear me, comrade?
Yes, ma'am. Black power. Sister, right on, right on. Yeah, man, we just want to, you know, welcome those who are listening, you know, to another show, the topic, you know, black economics. You know, it's always, it's not nothing new. It's just trying to, more and more, I think, as we go in this country, and how to, like, truly, once and for all, I guess, so to speak, try to define it, like what is it supposed to consist of, like how are we supposed to function on the black economic, how do you want to pronounce it, because it's so much more than just a, you know, just a two-word phrase. I think sometimes I've seen over the years, I've read a lot of books, you know, I've done a lot of homework and research, painstaking research and stuff. And so, you know, it can take a toll on you, over the years. But what I'm saying is, like, understanding, like, some over the years, there's this sort of utopian kind of, like, image, like this ideal, like, kind of thing. You know, what black economics should be. And, you know, wielding this, just picture this image, and somehow, some kind of way, everything is going to be all right, so to speak, if we, you know, we just do that. You know, we can solve our problems, we can end our problems. And I think those who've been in our midst over the years, I would say the past 100 years, you know, I would say the past 120 years, you know, sort of created this this image, and then not really explain to the average brother and sister on the street or in these communities. Sometimes, you know, you may hear me refer to them as little Vietnams, you know. And that's as a result of understanding the political situation in the 60s, how some of our elders were able to translate war on a bigger scale in a foreign country and correlating that to the communities that our people lived in the 60s, you know. And anybody who understands, you know, the lack thereof war, you know, the disparity, of course, which leads to, you know, vice. You know, vice leads to crime, drug addiction, alcoholism, you know, and, you know, having to have some kind of economic sufficiency to carry one's own community or neighborhood. And so it's not necessarily a black thing. You know, there's this perception that people take crime in the black community and put a spin on it and say it's all black people's fault. You know, look what the niggas is doing. You know, black people, you give black people something, you know, they'll fuck it up. You know, they're not a running administration or something or what have you. So we have to have some kind of savior that's got to come in, you know, to show us how it's done. You know, so these types of misguided things that we let people come in our midst and misdirect us, you know. But to begin with, you know, just a historical analysis of black economics, you know, sense, you know. And those of us who understand, you know, as opposed to those of us who don't, and of course it becomes a responsibility to educate those of us who don't. But really would take a rocket scientist to be honest, which, but, you know, from a historical perspective, you know, some people go back to Booker T. Washington, you know, and I've been in the midst of people, you know, that's high on Booker T. Washington. Everybody have their own personal favorites out of the, you know, the so-called black history, you know, African-American history, what have you. You know, and a lot of times, you know, we may run into each other, bump heads because our own personal favorites and whatnot, you know, the contradictions and stuff that arise, you know, inevitably. But, you know, some people go back to Booker T. Washington and say, well, yeah, you know, Booker T. Washington was the one who espoused, you know, black self-sufficiency and, you know, in so many words, you know, black economics and the black entrepreneurial spirit and all these types of things. But he comes under attack from other elements, in particular, you know, Du Bois and the gang, you know, this accommodation, this thing that they were critical of him over, you know, his accommodations type things and stuff. And so, you know, Booker T. Washington, and of course, you know, there's you know, buildings named after him, you know, particularly the high school or what have you. You know, I don't know Booker T. Washington Boulevard or something, but I do know that, you know, the school has been named after him and what have you. And this is in the, and like I said, the turn of the 20th century on into the 20th century, the 1910s, 20s, 30s, what have you. Following Booker T., I guess we can point to Marcus Garvey, you know. And this is where I think a lot of so-called controversy comes in. You know, we speak about Marcus Garvey's ideology because that's what it is at the end of the day, what it all boils down to. You know, so tonight we're going to, you know, delve into it and pick this shit apart and try to put it back together and see if we can draw a conclusion that conclude, an explanation that explain, like Chairman Fred of the Illinois chapter, Deputy Chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, you know, used to say, you know. Now, so, you know, Garvey's nationalistic approach, his self-determination approach, I believe that this elder had more of an understanding than any of those cats back in the day. And some people would contend with W.E.B. Du Bois, and that's fine. But the one thing that impressed me about Garvey was his understanding of the international scene about trade and commerce and that economics. Economic system, you know, on a large scale is tied to trade and commerce. And so Garvey's institutionalization of the UNIA, you know, Universal Negro Improvement Association, the Black Star Line, the shipping line, or what have you, because he understood that the financial wealth of, let's say, the continent of Africa, you know, is wealth. You know, it's material wealth. And so understanding that the oil was being exploited by the Rockefellers, you know, Garvey said, well, if the oil is good for Rockefeller, the oil must be good for the African. And that if the gold was good for Rothschild, then the gold is good for Africans, and the diamonds was good for Oppenheim or whoever, then the diamonds, you know, was good for Africans. And this is what he was talking about on an international scale and reeling in the African diaspora with a international economic superstructure that could unite us, and that if anybody fucked with us, then we had the power and the ability to defend ourselves. You know, no nation can prosper without economic institution, you know. So that was Garvey. Of course, on the local level, here in the Snakes, you know, we started the chapter of the UNI in 1916, whereas he inaugurated it when he was in his homeland of Jamaica in 1914. And so this is the area, a crucial stage, I believe, in the shaping of Black economics and the potential that, you know, possibly had, or that the potential that it showed. Now, during that era, the one thing that has been more advanced and popularized nowadays is what some of us know as Black Wall Street. And so Black Wall Street in the early 20th century, you know, the first decade of the 20th century, then the second decade, the 1910s, and on into 1921, which is when, you know, the confiscation, you know, I'd like to use that term, the violent confiscation of the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, the Greenwood area, which came to be known as Black Wall Street, 1921. And, you know, the excuse to extinguish it, you know, to neutralize it, as J. Edgar Hoover once said about the Black Panther Party, because of the threat that they posed to the internal security of this country. And so if you take the Black Wall Street from an economic perspective, you can see, in a sense, a threat to the internal security of the economic structure of this country, providing that the money, the finance, what have you, circulated within a certain prescribed area. And dollars appeared to have generated among these, the segment of Black people who were able to overcome the Black codes, the law against reading books, you know. And most people take that shit for granted, like, oh, that was during slavery, you know, that shit was 200 years ago, you know, the Black codes and whatnot. But most people take that shit for granted, the Black codes. And the Black codes had a drastic effect on us as a still displaced nation of people coming out of physical slavery. Yeah, you had grown men and grown women that couldn't read, you know, past third grade or fifth grade or eighth grade or what have you. And some of us still have, you know, our loved ones in our family who came out of the 60s on into the 70s, which may be our grandmothers and great uncles and aunts and third cousins and what have you, who were somehow illiterate. But there's a segment of the Black displaced population that came out of physical slavery that was able to muster some type of understanding intellectually, literacy, you know. And so, you know, they were able to capitalize on it and, as we say today, make something of ourselves. And this is what the Black Wall Street was predicated on. And, of course, you cannot have these discussions without talking about the white version or the Black version of white classism, the historical legacy of European classism, and how its effect on the colonizer, those who have been enslaved under the system of capitalism. And so in those eras, those times, you had as the hallmark of Black Wall Street. You had the, you know, what is referred to now as the upper and middle class, you know? And so that was the linchpin, so to speak, you know, to this area of prosperity and Black entrepreneurship and therefore Black economics, you know? And it was patronized by the rest of us, you know? And of course, the whites, you know, wanting to keep, you know, niggas down and niggas in their place, you know, they took the action and, you know, used the excuse or something about a white woman or some shit or what have you, and, you know, burn the shit down, you know, and that it's not that the blacks didn't fight back, you know, but the whole point is to say that here you have something that we are supposed to be doing, so we can lift ourselves up as a former slave population and the shit go down in flames. And so that's the 20s. And rolling on into the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s. And, of course, you know, you reach the Jim Crow era. We might also want to mention Noble Drew Ali in that period, you know, Garvey and, you know, up and around there. You might want to mention this is one of the lesser known black ideologists during that time. The ones who were more known, you know, was that Garvey, the Du Bois group and Booker T. Washington, you know, who were opposed to each other, you know, and so, but Noble Drew Ali, you know, had the ideas, similar ideas of some type of black self-sufficiency, which may have been more leaning toward a spiritual values, but at the same time understanding, you know, land rights, you know, the foundation. You can't have economics unless you have the land. You know, you're going to establish, you can have the land. So, you know, we want to mention Noble Drew Ali. And, of course, you know, today, you know, he still has followers today. You know what I'm saying? But so going into the Jim Crow era, you could look and see, of course, the effects of Garveyism again, you know, and what he had done, you know, and of course Garvey comes under attack, you know, and if not the first job of COINTELPRO under J. Edgar Hoover, it was the second job, you know, and Garvey was one of the first victims of COINTELPRO operations and the takedown of Garvey with some shit about some fraud. But most people don't understand that Garvey had infiltrators inside his organization. And one of these infiltrators had a code name by number. He was Agent 800. And that name, that number sort of strikes a chord in people's minds. Of course, you know, you dial 1-800 and stuff like that. You know, you look on the malt liquor company body, you see Old English 800. So, you know, I don't believe that that's a coincidence at all, period. And, of course, something about per slave with the amount in British pounds being sold at 800 pounds or something like that, whatever. But it's a number of things. It's a number of things in there. But so Garvey's effect was on one Elijah Poole, who became known as Elijah Muhammad, who was the founder, leader of the Nation of Islam. And there's old photos, you know, that were taken of you know, the UNIA membership and where they would meet at these halls, churches, what have you, and you wouldn't be able to tell them apart from pictures, you know, that's been taken inside the mosque on, let's say, Savior's Day in Chicago, and you see where the men are sitting one side and women are dressed a particular way, the men are dressed, you know, you're looking, and so Garvey's influence was lasting. Of course, the great Malcolm X, who started out as a disciple of Elijah Muhammad, a student of Elijah Muhammad. But the Nation of Islam also developed the, you know, this black self-sufficiency, you know, the black economics, black nationalism, ideology, you know. But the thing with the Nation of Islam at the time was separation from the so-called white man. And, of course, Marcus Garvey was also about separating from the European in the sense of the more of a, and that's not to say the Nation of Islam didn't share the same sentiment, but, you know, just for the record, it's like a moving away from the European ideal, let's say, of looking at the world through European lenses. You know what I'm saying? And so there's even some statements, comments on the part of Garvey, even to the point where Garvey talked about, you know, look, the white man fought for this shit. He took the shit and it belonged to him. And, you know, we look and get our own shit. And during that time, of course, you know, and I said earlier that, you know, he ran into problems. Du Bois in the game. You know, so there was this factionalism that was running rampant, you know, during that time. You know, and all these individuals who were supposed to be proponents of black self-sufficiency and self-determination could not get the other part down right, whether or not it was going to be our move back to Africa movement that Garvey espoused, as opposed to those of us who felt that our heart and souls lay here and that our seeds have been planted in the soil, so therefore this is our homeland too. But if you look at it, Garvey was right. And I don't think they had a problem with Garvey because Garvey was wrong. I think they had a problem with Garvey because Garvey was right. He wasn't ashamed to admit that as a black man. He wasn't afraid to say it. And he was driven to the point where black people had to establish their own shit too, you know. And so on into the 60s, like I said, you know, the 60s Nation of Islam, and of course, the detachment from the Nation of Islam, of course, resulted in the Great Malcolm X, the rise of the Great Malcolm X, his growth and development, and then going beyond the jurisdiction of this country, looking at the struggle in a way much more larger venue than just the local or national environment. And he began to connect, you know, the dots. You know, and he was similar to Garvey. Of course, you know, he had mentioned that his father was a Garvey. His parents were Garveyites, you know. So in his transformation from the criminal mentality to revolutionary mentality, which is what George Jackson had said years after Garvey, and that is how Malcolm X began to, you know, to transform himself and see the world through the black experience, you know. And so he went, you know, overseas, and he, you know, learned from Nkrumah and all these other African leaders during the time. And he came back with the Organization of Afro-American Unity, you know, and so espousing similar, you know, the black nationalist ideology, economics, and land. Of course, the land is the base of freedom, and without land, and you know, it's about pimps and hoes, you know, in this type of society that we live in. You know, so that's Malcolm X. On into the 70s, you know, the 70s, the 80s, is a struggle to keep Malcolm and Garvey alive. You know, in particular, you know, Garveyism, to keep that alive, you know, in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. And, of course, this same period, we have to understand these opposing forces, these unseen forces that work behind the scenes and say, well, you know, the Negroes have gotten some understanding of economics. You know, they're intellectual leaders, the petty bourgeoisie Negro leadership, the intellectuals had grown exponentially. And so the writing's on the wall. And so we had better get some type of control of it or have some kind of influence on it. And so it was families like the Rockefeller family. And so the Rockefeller family took up this entrepreneurial spirit of the Negro, you know, equity, economic equity or economic equality. And still to this day, as recently as 2020, you know, the Rockefeller have a, you know, their foundation, you know, their philanthropy. The Rockefeller Foundation, Each Opportunity Collected, which is directed and aimed at poor families and communities of color to bring up economic equity in those communities. And we have to see it for what it is. While at the same time, there are those of us who say they're black, those of us who claim to be black, get on board. And so we have to question that. We have to take a look at that and say, again, you know, what is this shit supposed to look like? And how is it that some outside financial resources is going to literally give itself to the very people that has been controlling for the longest through various networks and tentacles like an octopus, you know? And so I remember saying one time a book cover where they took a picture of these three young brothers, you know, with like computer equipment like that, so like they was building a computer or something, you know, like technology or some shit. And, you know, they put that there and say, you know, the black entrepreneur or something, that is a whole Rockefeller orchestrated thing. You know, and I'm quite sure their leadership back in the 60s that understood the shit. But obviously it would appear to me, you know, having taken a look at least long enough, and I could be wrong, but I can't recall any so-called meetings of the mind or these black contract with America, contract with Black America, or Tavis Smiley's little joint. There's other Rockefeller man whose name escapes me at the moment. But at none of these functions of these venues where all these the intellectuals, you know, they get together and they have these panels and they sit them up on the stage and discuss all this shit back and forth. But I cannot recall any of them actually exposing us to the unseen forces that seek to control what black economics ought to look like, you know, by dumping in millions and millions and millions of dollars. And some people said, well, you know, Nat, man, you know, we ain't got nothing, you know, oh shit. You know, let's take that money, man. And it's been so what shit. We don't have nothing. What they tell us every year around Christmas time, they tell us we spend our X amount of dollars. What you mean we don't have nothing? You know, what they tell us when Essence come? What they tell us when Bayou Classic happens? You know, or the big one in Atlanta, the championship game. What they tell us then? So you know, collectively, so it's this thing. You know, people want to pick and choose when they can see the collective and when they can't. You know, there's this, like, it's like hopscotch. You know, they're jumping in and out of consciousness and shit. You know, so, oh, look, man, these days is over with. You know, so we say nobody could ever finance black economics and somehow black people going to be independent of that shit. Nothing for free. You know, this shit ain't for free. And so on into the 90s, the 2000s. Like I said, the reason 2020, you know, the old Rockefeller thing, like what I talked about the Rockefellers in 2020 is not new. It's something that they've been recognized in the 60s, coming out of the 60s, you know, with these civil rights bills and all this kind of shit, or integration, stuff like that, you know. And so they're just thinking ahead, in other words, you know, because they know somehow, some kind of way, when Malcolm X was murdered, he was physically dead. But his spirit was still alive. And they had Marcus Garvey's spirit through members of the old UNIA, you know, the Garveyite movie. They were Garveyites that were still living. I had the chance to meet a Garveyite in my lifetime, you know, maybe about 8-10 years ago. You know, she had to have been like 90-something, you know. But, you know, so it's the spirit of these certain individuals that we must keep alive if we're going to talk about what true and legitimate, authentic, realistic black economics is going to look like, how it's going to be shaped, you know, how much you operate it. And I want to say this for those who are listening, you know, Shit, press that one on your phone if you have any questions, comments, you know, and participate. It may be those of you who are listening who could give your view or paint a picture of what it should look like. But I don't believe these types of conversations or dialogues are really intricately delved into. You know, they're generalized, you know, Black Economic Forum, you know, Black Empowerment. But nobody actually goes into Black Empowerment. You know, okay, inside the word empowerment, of course, is the word power. Okay, so when you say Black Empowerment, what necessarily that shit supposedly consists of, is like, well, duh. You know, it's supposed to empower you to be successful, that kind of shit there. Okay, well, being successful at doing what and how and with what? You know, a lot of people get this shit twisted. You know, and I'm going to be straight up with it. And there's no attack or subtle message, subliminal statement to nobody, but it is what it is. If you truly understand the system, first of all, you cannot beat what you don't know. So if you don't understand the system, how you gonna deal with the system? How you gonna battle the system? How you gonna struggle against the system and claiming, you know, your freedom? You after your freedom? You seeking freedom? You know, on a much more brutal, hardcore liberation. You know what I'm saying? So you can't be what you don't know, and trying to set some shit up in the midst of these, you know, like, you know, the Nation of Islam say, these devils. You know, and expect them to be angels when you establish the shit, you build the shit, you establish it, the shit gets going, and you expect them to be angels and for them to be all right with what you got. You know, well, shit, if they devils, then what you think? You know, the same shit that happened 100 years ago, burn the motherfucker down. You know, find a way to take it back from these niggas. You know, get it out of them again. You know, and it may not be burning it down, you know, just out in raw, open, naked, straight raw violence. It may not be no more of that shit there. It may be on a much more sophisticated level, much more sophisticated way. You know, today shit, you know, they hit you with the stroke of a pen, some type of mandate or some type of code violation. You know, some people like in the city of New Orleans, you know, Black entrepreneurs, you know, want to open up an establishment or business in certain sectors of the city, and all of a sudden they getting visits from the fucking police. They getting visits from the IRS you know, one of these little three letter suit groups wearing a fucking jacket with some letters on the back. You know what I'm saying? Talking about some kind of infraction or something, and we got to shut it down. These little subliminal, subtle, sophisticated tactics. Because of certain types of minds, certain types of people who are thinking in the, you know, this entrepreneurial spirit, and that's just the beginning. You know what I'm saying? But what really is this empowerment supposed to do? I take the collective in the consideration. I don't take some student that's going to Howard, you know what I'm saying, or Dillard, or Spellhouse, I mean Spelman or Morehouse or Mississippi Valley, Jackson State. You know what I'm saying? I won't take it like that. You know, you say empowerment, I'm talking about the collective youth and the young adult masses, period. Whether or not they're working at McDonald's or they're stocking at Walmart or out on the street trying to figure out how they're going to, you know, keep some change in their pocket. And it was very, very, very clear because these little class antagonisms will seep in. Now, I've said before, even in personal conversation, you know, with people that I consider very near and dear to me, you know, as comrades, about whether or not, you know, okay, it'd be one in the struggle. You hear people say, well, yeah, man, how you gonna finance? How you gonna have a revolution without no finance? All these antagonistic questions, or these panicky questions. Looking for some type of rebuttal to somebody, you know, who fully understands the shit. But what I'm saying is, on that note, you know, there's no one monolithic thing. It's like you have different, you're the one setting the tone. And you set the tone and you bring that to the table. It's okay, well, check this out. You know, you're gonna be the money man. You're gonna be the egghead. You know what I'm saying? Egghead is a slang, is a terminology that the Greeks use for those who did all the thinking, who had the brains and shit. You know what I'm saying? The eggheads, right? So, okay, those the eggheads. These are the fighters. You know, now you set the tone by making that statement. So now you just inherited responsibility. See, when it gets like that, you know, some people may get a little jittery over that. You know what I'm saying? Man, look, the gloves is coming off. This is not a prescribed conversation. This is not a glass ceiling dialogue. The sky's the limit conversation. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I ain't going to say anything goes, but each and everything, you know, as possible that we can come up and think about must be said and discussed. And again, it's not a personal thing. It's just being realistic. So we say you empower people. So we empower people to do what? Empower them to get money and live happily ever after, you know, get a big house, and a nice car, you know, nice jewelry, you know, expensive clothes, handbags, you know, and whatnot, you know, suits, you know, a yacht, can afford to move into the Hamptons. I mean, what are we talking about here? What are we talking about? We empower people, you know, to accumulate financial resources to liberate themselves out of the condition that they're in, because this empowerment through black economics is a temporary fix, unless there are those who seek to garner that, gain that, and then they stop right there, you know, and say, okay, I'm good. So when you look around, you say, okay, well, look, you got a product, you got a brand. Right, so in this country, you to have economics, you have to have a product, you have something to sell to people, a brand or what have you, whatever you want to call it. And of course, part of that is what, you know, marketing the shit, selling it to people, getting the people to want to purchase it. There's also trades or what have you. There's those of us who learn carpentry and whatnot, you know, being an electrician. There are those who take on your barber, you know, a hairstylist. So, you know, we got hair salons and barbers all over America, all over the country, hair salons all over the country. As a matter of fact, there's even hair salon shows, comedy. I've had the chance to go to one just out of curiosity and go in there and sit in a big, huge-ass hotel ballroom with all these different people up in there. And it's like, damn, you know. Okay, so you have that. And, of course, you know, if you're a barber, see, you know, you ain't getting supported just by somebody who lives in the upscale neighborhood. You talking about the hood. And so you're a barber or a hairstylist, then a portion of your money, a huge chunk of your money come from the hood. Okay, so now you get to the point where you say, again, you know, what is black economics? You know, what is black economics? So to support, right? You know, buy black, buying black, and so you buy black, and all of a sudden, you know, you look a nightclub even. You have a nightclub, whatever, you know, patronize your business and go in and have themselves a nice time after working hard and whatnot, you know. Somebody go out and have a birthday celebration or whatever, you know. But anyway, it's all across the board. So a lot of that money comes from the hood, but when the hood come under attack, now what? Now what is the responsibility on the part of these entrepreneurs who gain a portion of their money from the neighborhood when they're coming under attack? See, this is how I take black economics too. I'm just taking it, you know, like I said, I'm just taking it just like, you know, yeah, well, you know, I open up a business and I make $1 million, $10 million, $15 million, and I'm cool with the shit. Now, I'm not going to sit here, I'm not going to stand here and say that there's no brother or sister out there who's made a lot of money that they don't do for the, you know, for the community. I'm not saying that. But it would show collectively, you know, when the black community comes under attack from opposing forces, from alien forces, Where is that class, that group that has that entrepreneurial spirit that's riding the wave of black economics at then? See, that's what part of it is. That's one factor. Now, another thing, and let me say this here right quick, too. You know, I was trying to give like a little rundown on, let's say, rundown on like the history of black economics, how the idea developed, whatnot. Another thing is, where did the slogan "Buy Black" come from? You know, how did that slogan arrive or derive? You know, "Buy Black." You know, I remember saying years ago, you know, on the back of vehicles, you know, bumper stickers, you know, "Buy Black." You know, there was another one that said something about "Buy Black" or "Perish" or some shit like that, whatever. But anyway, you know, I used to wonder about these slogans. You know, like what somebody had to first say this shit, you know, at some point in our history in this country. Somebody had to first say it, you know. Just like somebody came up with the Sprite jingle, you know, for Sprite soda, McDonald's jingle for a hamburger company, right? So to my understanding, and this may be a little bit disheartening to some people, but to my understanding, it was a result of the ending of physical slavery. And there was also a small class of us before the ending of physical slavery. And notice I say physical slavery on purpose, okay? But before the ending of physical slavery, there was a small class of black people, you know, at the time was referred to as Negroes, that had accumulated some wealth. And they were able to open up some type of business, what have you, some type of guild, you know, to earn money. So they had customers. And these customers weren't necessarily black. They were white. So when the writing was on the wall for the ending of physical slavery, them same whites turned on these free blacks who was able to accumulate, you know, resources, right? Now, some of these blacks may have been, going back and trying to buy their brother or their sister or their cousin or their daughter, their son's freedom from the, you know, the white slave master, you know, freeing them off the plantation that way, which was very clever, you know. But as a result of that, the white patrons had turned on these black entrepreneurs. And so, and it must be said, this same small class wasn't necessarily, a lot of them weren't necessarily trying to get with the other blacks. So there was some type of standoffish this day, right? And this is recorded. Now, after the physical slavery was over with, then the loss of their white patrons meant the decline in their business. And so this is how the concept of buying black derived. Now all of a sudden these other black population, you know, which you can consider the Russian term, the lumpen proletariat, or the poor peasant black, so to speak, like they would speak in like in China, in medieval China, or in that era, like a peasant, like, so to speak. So now all of a sudden, this black population is important now, because this black population can save them. See, that's how the slogan "Buy Black" derived. It was because of that. You see, so right on into today. Now again, how are we going to define black economics? What's it going to look like? You know, and I say you're a sitting duck. If you don't understand the history of it, you take a careful look, a close look at it, and go back and examine the shit and then come forward. And Malcolm tried to teach us about going to learn about history, you know. Even Amos Wilson, who's one of the lesser known extraordinary strong black minds, who didn't cut no corners or bite his tongue. You know, I remember listening to him one time, and he had said that if you want to understand black people, you know, why we do the things we do this way, he said, study the history of white people. You know, and it was like so profound. It's like I should have already knew that, but to hear him say it, it just really hit home. I mean, it really, really registered. You see what I'm saying? But so coming forward, here we are today. Now, there's been an attempt or two, and we cannot leave out, of course, the Republic of New Africa and the rise of the Republic of New Africa before the 70s kicked in, around 68, where they convened in Detroit and declared the vision of government, a republic of New Africa, and just establishing a plebiscite, and then declaring that the Southern Belt, from Louisiana to South Carolina, the Southern Belt, which of course was a, which is where the bulk of our people had lived before these begin to make these migrations out, like to the northeast or the Midwest, in particular cities like Chicago and Detroit, what have you, before World War One, at the behest of World War One, World War Two, this great migration outward and stuff like that, developing the black, what's referred to as the black metropolis, and of course, you had Detroit Red, that was, Malcolm X doing his day, when Malcolm was a gangster, when you had this, this population movement, that branched out and sort of the because of the war, right? And so this is how we ended up, out in the rest of the country, branching out. But the Southern Belt had been the enclave, of the black existence. And so the Republican of Africa understand that history, and they recognize, the lack of residual return for the labor that had been performed by their ancestors, and so therefore declaring a natural right, to those southern states, and declaring the Republic of New Africa off of the being the descendants of the motherland of Africa, and so developing the jurisdictional land territory of the Republic of New Africa. And of course, similar types of clandestine operations, what have you, was carried out against them. You know what I'm saying? And so under the leadership of Omari Obadeli, who became a political prisoner. And of course, what they were able to do and the impact that they had. And the Republic of New Africa developed their own army, their own security force, the Black Legionnaires, uniform and everything, trained and everything. So understanding the concept of Garveyism and trying to make it into a literal reality. And of course, there's a number of other things that you can take into consideration, but we know that the one thing is the reparation issue. Okay, that comes along with that, because there's those who understand that as America is on her way out, and her desperate hours, desperate people do desperate things in desperate time, in her desperate hour, we believe that America is holding the reparations as their ultimate trump card, as their ultimate card at the table, when it comes down to the people that they've treated like shit for the past 500 years. So when push comes to shove, and this is why you see these subtle messages and signs now, let's not get it twisted. Elizabeth Warren, some of these other people, this other white boy that's been going around, I can't think of his name, but it's been several of them. It's been several of them, and they've been accused of being socialists. But let's not be fooled here. You know what I'm saying? They know deep down inside in their subconscious that they know that the final hour, of course, that they're going to have to make some kind of move, because they're going to need allies, because the world is turning against this country and this system and this government. And so, the one last time, like Michael Jordan's documentary, The Last Dance, in his own narcissistic, selfish way, being placed in the spotlight, like a spoiled child, who's a sore loser, who can't take losing. To turn that into their desperate hour and at last give black people reparation for the 400 years of slavery and whatnot, and the atrocities and the rape and the pillaging and the robbing and the murdering and the lynching and all this kind of shit. But we look at that and say, okay, well, what is this reparation going to turn itself into? Because in order to be able to speak about black economics, we can include reparations in this too, in this discussion. You see what I'm saying? For one, those of us who think, the reparations will set us all into the stratosphere some way. But there's, of course, there's a number of issues that come with, okay, well, how is the reparation going to be meted out? You know, I mean, what's it going to be paid in worthless paperbacks, greenbacks, or is it going to be paid to us in gold, you know, credit, which means that they would have to go to the banks. They would have to go to the central banks, the Federal Reserve, and, you know, the credit companies. You know, some people are starting to veer over into Bitcoin, into electric currency. You know, cryptocurrency. I have a high school classmate. He said that they can give him his in cryptocurrency. You know, so how is it going to be meted out to us? And then once we get it, what are we going to do with it? You know, what are we going to do with this X amount of money and build a black superstructure here in this country or in another land? You know, like you're talking about jurisdiction. Again, it has to be brought into consideration, you know, and again, of course, what that black economics is going to look like, you know. In more recent times, beyond the Republic of New Africa, you had what we refer to as the Nubian Nation, who had developed under the leadership of Malachi Z. York. You know, who his father was considering him to be Messiah-like, you know, a true spiritual leader, you know, one whose intuitiveness was exceptional. And so, you know, sort of quasi-religious, you know, developing a type of philosophy or ideology, similar in a sense to, you know, the Nation of Islam, Republican. It was like a combination of things, so to speak. But years ago, in more recent times, they set out to carry out this similar task by setting up a settlement in Edenton, Georgia, outside of Atlanta. And before you know it, the state vamped on them with 200 local, state, and federal pigs. And confiscated the land. To my understanding, you know, they were actually building pyramidal-like structures because of their spiritual belief, being the descendants of the ancient Egyptians and the high culture and knowledge, of course, you know, which is based, rooted in what's referred to as Maya. And so they were able to make some headway. And they were building these pyramidal type structures, trying to recreate a modern day ancient Egypt. And before you know it, here come the state. You see, so the pigs rolled up in there, and I had met one of the brothers who was actually up on that property, and he was saying how, you know, they, you know, was raising up, you know, weapons, got children held at gunpoint. You know, with this raid, it was no more than a settlement raid, just like the IRS come and raid your house, you know, over taxes or what have you, or trumped up charges about your failure to pay tax, you know, to keep rendering taxes under Caesar, you see. And but the jive, the media jive, was these charges of crossing the state line with something to the effect of children molestation or something like that, and of course operating without a liquor license. You know, the Nubian Nation, they don't even you know, indulge in alcohol, but that was the media perception. Of course, the media's persecution, public persecution of them, of course, to isolate them. You know, isolate them as some sort of fringe group, some sort of crazy, delusional group, and of course the word cult, you know, under this person who considered himself Jesus, you know, like the white leaders, you know, the Branch Davidians, under the leadership of David Koresh, who declared himself, you know, the Jesus who would return, and Jim Jones, you know, and, you know, figures like that. But that was the whole media, their job to villainize what the new YBN Nation was setting out to do, reestablish a modern-day Kemet right here in America. You know, but Garvey had long warned and spoke against utopianism. And that's not to run them in the ground. But what he was saying is, you know, a nation has its own defenses too. And you know, we don't know how far that the new YBN Nation may have gone in that area. But we understand, of course, you know, the state is, you know, is very reactionary. And they can be very violent when they want to. But these are just the types of things that we have to recognize in trying to establish black economics and what is it going to look like. So thus far, you know, we've laid out, you know, what should it look like, or an idea of what it could possibly be by several examples, you know. And of course, what kind of system this ideology, what is it supposed to be based on? Are we to take this black economics and, you know, pretty much adapt the European view of the world, you know, the European ideal of economics, and just paint it with a black brush and say it's black economics? Or are we to look to our heritage and culture from whence we came? I don't give a shit how long we've been separated from the continent. Those of us who were brought here violently by force, you know, at the bottom of a boat, you know, on some long journey, developing the inauguration of our schizophrenia. They label us today as being bipolar. You know, I'm giving shit, it was 500 years. Shit, the Irish ain't forgot what the British been doing. I mean, it's been 1,000 years. You see what I'm saying? The Christians haven't forgotten what they've been into with the Muslims and these religious wars they've been having for 1,000 years. You know, the Christians haven't forgotten the ass kickings they've gotten from the Muslims several times and have had Jerusalem snatched from them. You see? And so what are we supposed to do? Should we look back to our homeland, our motherland, Africa, and take the our ideology from there? And so this economics can have an authentic African superstructure, an aspect to it. You know, so therefore, for one thing, it would definitely prevent or curtail is the, you know, the eventual contradictions or class struggle amongst ourselves as a group. And so one of the terms that I've been able to learn of in our indigenous African economic collaborative, cooperative effort is Umbundu. You know, some people may have heard of the word Bantu. The Bantu-speaking people of Southern Africa, and how the word Bantu just simply means the people, the clan, the men and woman, man and woman and child. You know, these terms that have something to do with community, unity, oneness, and so forth, you know, that we understand today. The word community, you see, those words come out of that one term defines all of that. And so, therefore, collectively, how are we supposed to run there's a business, and then there's cooperatives. Now, Europeans are always copying shit. They're always copying shit, and they're well aware of the concept of Umbundu. They're well aware of it, so much so that I believe the Rutgers men's basketball team is one of the college basketball teams that I ran across, you know, just looking into, you know, the Umbundu concept, and I saw where the white coach took the Umbundu concept and applied it to the basketball team. And the basketball team started to win. You know, so they're always copying shit. They're always looking into somebody else's shit and seeing what's there that they can benefit, you know, exploit a benefit from themselves, and then eventually turn it around against you. You see, and so without a clear understanding, or we have to do like everybody else have to, you know, dig deep and study and research and spend time away from all of, you know, the shopping and the partying and the drinking and the smoking and whatnot, want to, you know, whatever, this kind of shit, want to go to All-Star Weekend, whatever. But spend some time away for that if we're going to really be getting down, you know, to real business shit. Or is it just be some synthetic thing? You know, but I'd be damned if, and speaking personally, I'd be damned if I'm going to jump out of white capitalism and jump right into black capitalism, because I'm going to turn my gun on them too. You know, capitalism is capitalism, whether it's black, brown, red, white, or black, brown, red, yellow, or white. It's still capitalism. If you put a dress on a pig, what do you have? You still have a pig. You're just wearing a dress, you see? And so, again, how is it supposed to look? Now, this may seem to be a bit strong to some, you know, but again, you know, we ask this question. You know, we ask this question. How is it supposed to look? Because I'm with the shit. I'm with it. You know, I'm with supporting whatever is going to get us out of the holes that we're in. But mind you, that black economics can lead to liberation, okay, realistically. But there's some things that we must consider and take into consideration, which is what we're trying to do here tonight. You know, and we may have to come back for a part two, who knows, but you know, we have to take these things into consideration, but we can't cherry pick. You know, we can't look at the shit and then pick what's cool for me and what's not cool for sister, and then what's cool for sister over here is what's not cool for brother over here. We have to take it collectively. But there are those of us who we clearly understand. Shit, just getting paid, just making that money. You know, some of us are successful. Some of us are entrepreneurs. We're making money hand over fist. You know what I'm saying? But don't do shit with a hood. Don't do nothing. You know, then come under attack by the IRS or the government, and all of a sudden they want the black militants to be right there with them. They want the black militants to go stand toe-to-toe with the pig or up at the federal courthouse, standing there toe-to-toe with the fucking National Guard or something, whatever, guarding the courthouse, because they're feeling some kind of attack from these black militants, these radicals who's on the fucking, you know, domestic terrorist list. You know, I want to have it both ways. There are some of us who are out there, you know. And so we say, well, good luck. And that's real shit. That's real shit. If we're going to do it collectively, we have to knock these little barriers down. We have to knock these little walls down. They got brothers out there in this world who are willing to fight, you know, but struggling to eat. They got black people out there who got all kind of money who ain't willing to fight but got a refrigerator the size of a fucking closet. You know? So how is this supposed to look? You know, and even in the future, some of us have gotten tired of the same old job. You know, we've gotten tired of the same intellectual masturbation, you know, from these talking heads, you know, the Cornel Wests of the world, the Mike Rabbit Dyson. We've got tired of that shit. We've gotten tired of it, you know. We've gotten tired of it. And so we started looking to ourselves. We started realizing we could take our own lives back into our own hands, you know, by any means necessary. You know, but it's the masses of people that have to do the footwork, you know, that have to soldier every day, that have to come your way, that have to pass up the white-owned restaurant to get to the black-owned restaurant, you know, they have to pass the white barber to come to the black barber. They have to pass the white hairstylist to get to the black hairstylist salon, and so forth. We've got some brothers in the corporate world. When you take Nipsey Hussle, You take him, who was a victim of political assassination, political murder. Regardless of what, you know, they try to push his narrative, or he had some beef with another possible gang member, or what, you know, regardless of that, you know, we know better than believing that story. But of course, you know, there's a lot of gullible people who believe in that shit. You know what I'm saying? Just like this Tupac Biggie thing. But you know, we see what Nipsey was attempting to do. You see, and Nipsey had made connections with a very wealthy so-called black entrepreneur who had been in the business of real estate or construction, you know, building, you know, skyscrapers, made money hand over fist. And so these connections were made with him, you see. And so his individual was such as that. So where do they fit in this black economic structure, you know? And again, if it's just that only white people know how to do this shit, but just that white people control all the means of production in terms of technology, you know, pretty much that, you know, computer technology or what have you, you know, being the purveyors of, you know, creating apps and whatnot, you know, transferring money at the push of a button and all this kind of stuff, whatever, you know, if that be, then we have to follow them. And we say, okay, well, we built the fucking pyramids, and we have to start doing, we have to do it that way, and we have to be that way. And so you want to talk about self-sufficiency, self-determination, self-independence and whatnot. You know, just expect some blowback. There's always some blowback. And so there'd be those, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I can go cross over into that water. I don't know if I can get, you know, you got some reservations. Okay, well, shit, what is, like, what you have another definition, understanding, or explanation of what this black economics is. You know, if you take going into such realms as, you know, the trades, you know, trading, you know, day trading, stocks and bonds and shares in a company and corporation, you know, is that supposed to be part of the black economic structure? You know, and if so, then we dabble in the trade with the Europeans and the S&Ps and Fortune 500s. So how is it supposed to look? You know, we tell them kiss our ass. If you take these black athletes who play, in particularly the football and basketball, they may be able to survive playing baseball, but we know they damn sure enough won't be able to survive if all those niggas just decide they just wanted to walk. Okay, if they decide they just wanted to walk. Now, when these police murders, you know, these unarmed black men, you know, you had this phenomena of the NBA, in particular, and even the women's professional basketball. You know, where you had this sort of quick, spontaneous rebelliousness, some little taints of militancy being shown. You know, shit, we say, look, yeah, check this out. Look, shit, don't nobody play no games. You know, fuck, they don't play no games, period. And they must understand, you know, you won't be alone. You won't be by yourself. See, it's the motivation. See, these are the things. This is how revolutions start. This is how revolutions start. You know, you have a group of people that make a move, they take a stand, and then the people become motivated. They become motivated, and they say, well, damn, shit. Well, they ain't playing no back. Well, we with them. And some of us are like, well, we won't do that. Maybe we're going to sit down and meet with Exxon. We're going to sit down and meet with Walmart Corporation. We're going to sit down and meet with IBM and all these other people, the corporations, the 500 clubs, and we're going to get it. We're going to get $1 billion. We're going to establish programs and uplift the black community. This is bullshit. Straight bullshit, but we know if those who play basketball and NFL, if they walk, it game's over. You see the little commercial with the little dude, one of the car companies, you know, he pull up in his nice ride, you know, and his three homeboys sitting outside and getting ready to eat lunch, whatever, some nice little joint, they all dressed, you know, they clean and shit. You get out, you got a little top hat on, suit, whatnot, whatever, and then he pull his old man, we got somebody, you know, that stepped up their game. And you do get out, you come around, sit down, he sits down, he says, game over. Shit, damn right, game over. Straight up, game over. You a straight walkout. You know, You were talking about black economics, some self-sufficiency, self-determination. Well, shit, let's start our own basketball league. Let's start our own NFL. Let's start our own football league. Listen, man, those white people don't come, go sit in those stands at no football game to see no white boy do shit. Those white people go there to see a nigga make some incredible move, make some extraordinary catch that they refer to as impossible. Okay, that's what they go there for, to see a nigga dash past somebody, spin, turn, jump over the other one, you know, throw the other one off. One got the shoulder, one got the leg, and he break free and run for 85-yard touchdown or make some last-second touchdown catch in the end zone. It's him and three defenders, and he the one come down with one. That's what they go there for. They ain't going there to see no white boys do nothing. Straight up. That shit is based on these niggas out here on these fields doing all these things. So if they walk, tomorrow, game over. Straight up. Now, they, like I said, they may be able to survive. They may be able to survive Major League Baseball. And the only thing they'll have for sure left is hockey and golf. All right? And tennis. But we know the top two sports in this country is football and basketball. So when they start talking that shit about equality and justice, it's sort of a cop out to avoid Garveyism, you know, which is why Garvey come under attack in the first place. It's the same shit, you know. And they talk about empowerment. Well, yeah, well, shit. Let's empower, you know, these young cats that play in the NBA. Let's empower them to start their own league. You won't see him tell me that we ain't got enough black people that can run a front office. You won't see him give me believe that shit. See, you can go to any bank in America and find some sister running a bank. She could be the CEO, you know. And as far as this folk, you know, the lead, but shit, a collective agreement of collective ownership with the black collective masses of the country, because people gonna be going there to get in, still patronizing the sports paraphernalia, all of that shit you have to take into consideration if it's going to be about black economics. Now, I'm going way out there with it. Like I said, the sky is the limit that we're going to be talking about. You understand what I'm saying? So it's a whole concept. It's a whole kind of empowerment. You know, that's one wicked empowerment. But no, you want to empower our youth to stay in school and become motivated to have this and have that, you know, to have a nice job and good. No, like the latest commercial, the newest commercial, the corporation they have the three Leons. One's a baby Leon Senior, Leon Junior, and Leon the second. All right, this is a new commercial. And so what they showed is, oh, baby Leon is saving money for his first set of wheels. Okay, Father Leon is paying for his paint job on his house, and he got a white woman standing next to him. Okay, and then they show Papa Leon, the elder, vacationing in the south of France. That ain't no coincidence at all. And for those who talk about black economics, we have to talk about that. We have to talk about these subtle messages, these attack on the black male's mind. You see what I'm saying? You let me make the commercial. I said, well, Baby Leon is saving, you know what I'm saying? So you go open up his first car company. Father Leon is paying, you know, the properties that he owns, his real estate business. And Papa Leon is vacationing, going to see the pyramids. Or Papa Leon is vacationing, going back to his roots somewhere in Ghana or Burkina Faso or Mali, where his ancestors were stolen from violently. That's black economics. You know, you have black economic marketing, you know, marketing strategies, you know, you know, to be able to pull it off. You know, we start locally. It's no problem. But at some point, if this black economics was to take off, then what is it supposed to look like? But what is the end game of this black economics? You know, what is the end game? You know, Huey P. Newton said that, you know, these are survival programs, pending revolution, the revolutionary transformation of society. of society. The demolition or the dismantling of this present system as we know it, because it is inherently fascist. It is the most clandestine fascist system on this earth as we speak. Okay, in ways that the average brother and sister doesn't readily perceive it to be what it is, because of all the different types of cosmetics, all the different types of shenanigans, veils, you know, that's pulled every day, you know, the different types of entertainments, you know, wielding to the people in this country you better off here than in Iraq. You better off here than in Afghanistan. You better off here than in the Congo. You know, you better off here than you are in the Amazon and Brazil. You know, and so civilization is put out as the car that parks itself. You know, the smart car, the smart house, the smart phone. And so this is the drug that prevents the average brother and sister from understanding what civilization is really supposed to be about. You know, this may be the most technologically advanced civilization in the world when it comes to technology and all this type of stuff. You know, they're in the lab, they're constantly in the lab trying to take science and technology and put a spin on something, make something or whatever. But that's just to keep themselves in the privileged position that they are, the white ruling class. You see? But when you take a look at it, why is it the most violent country in the world? Why is it the most violent? Why does it have the world's highest prison population? And, of course, we can go back and look at that and say, well, the lack of economic infrastructure in the communities from whence most of these prisoners in the concentration camps derive from, poor communities of color. You know, black and brown people, you know, in general, and here we're speaking, you know, talking about black power, black nationalism, black economics, black people specifically, you know what I'm saying? But pending the revolutionary transformation of society to where the people can liberate themselves from the tentacles of what? The tentacles of the system and what the system is predicated on. And I'll never be able to say it enough that capitalism is the enemy. It's always been an enemy of black people, non-whites in particular, and even the enemy of the poor whites, the degenerate whites, who in Russia referred to as the lumpen proletariat, the lumpen class, you know, the scum of the earth, who didn't have anything to lose, so therefore they robbed and shot and stole and killed during the Russian Revolution in 1917 and afterwards in the 20s. It was madness that was taking place, you know. And so this is what we see here, madness that is taking place. And so it's no doubt that it's the system that drives things. And so the aftermath of that is what? Black people to establish a true economics, having thrown off the yoke of political, economic, and social oppression. And so, therefore, a cleaning up period, you know, and then the transformation of the black man and the transformation of the black woman, which automatically ensnares the black child. The regaining of our humanity as a people, and to therefore conquer economic disparities in the so-called communities in which we are trapped. The 60s was just a charade for integration. The state never really panicked. They only panicked when it was certain organizations or formations that were in the business of giving the people the real shit. And of course, we know that one group was the Black Panther Party, was declared to be the most, you know, dangerous respected in terms of security of this government, the system, or whatever you want to call it. You know what I'm saying? And so in the aftermath, you know, to be able to establish a true black economics, you know, where we can live happily ever after, you know. But that is pretty much what we want to bring across tonight. I thought we might have had a particular call on here. I don't know if he's listening or if you want to press one and get in. But you know, if you're listening, you know, you could have, you know. But if you're still on, you know, we'd like to hear from you, bro. You know what I'm talking
Black
about.
Power,
but yeah, is that you, bro?
Yes, sir. Black Power, brother Nat Turner. Black Power.
Go ahead on, man. Go ahead on, man. Look, we got like 8-9 minutes left. But go ahead, man. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Hey, I called it 10 minutes before, man. I was just excited about this one, comrade, because it's so on point. And it's crazy because you literally cover everything. Like, I wanted to press one, but every time I was going to press one, you took the words out of my mouth. What I'm going to say.
Look, let me just say this. I was doing all right tonight, man. So well, go ahead, man.
If you do a part two, I would love to come back the following Tuesday and just kind of bring a little follow-up. But, yeah. No, this is the crazy thing, because the way you ended it, how you talked about how so much madness, you know, I'm going to say this, right, and this kind of leads into that second part. Whenever you do it, please, I love to jump on. But it's kind of money is not economics, and we got to understand that. You know what I'm saying? Economics is resource and civilization. And when you rob a civilization of its resources, which the first is the people, you start to see that, you know, it becomes more of a fight, more of a struggle for the resources. And that's the position that we're in right now. You know, the madness that's happening, this turmoil that's happening across the planet, the crazy thing is that it's a struggle for the resource of Africa. You know what I'm saying? The shit that we've seen in Ukraine, the shit that we've seen across the planet, and notwithstanding America's hand in it all. You know, if you follow the money, it always leads back to America. You know, if you follow the blood trails, it always leads back to America. I want to say this, right? And I'm on the boards to drop something if you you get ready to close out, right? But I'm going to say this, you know, with all of this madness going on, let's not forget about the predictive programming, right, that they put onto us through propaganda. You know, that's always going to be my niche, I guess, is propaganda and how deep of a hold they have on us with propaganda. Don't forget that last Purge movie that was set in Texas and how they were attacking the Latino and the black people. Don't forget that most of your shows about the future are set in a dystopic time, from the Book of Eli to some of the newer stuff. What was the one they did? The Hunger Games, all these different shows and stuff like that. We're not going to flying car future is what I'm saying. We can't forget that the shit that we've experienced in these little Vietnam in the ghettos are the fuel and the power that we need moving forward. Because again, America is not going into a flying car future. These are the dark ages, and we got to live accordingly. Brother Nat, you've been on point tonight. I'm just going to sit back and let's roll it on now. Black Power, brother.
Yeah, Black. Hey, man, good hearing from you, man. Hey, man, look, I love you, brother. You heard me straight up, man. That's some real talk, man. We're going to rap more, you know what I'm saying? But look, I just want to reiterate something. You hitting the rat on the head. And that's why I said that Garvey understood the shit better than most of them. You know what I'm saying? When he said, when he looked at the landscape, the international scene, and he said that if the oil is good for a Rockefeller, it must be good for the African. And if the gold is good for Rothschild, then it's got to be good for the African. And if the diamonds are good for Oppenheimer, it's got to be good for the African. And that's exactly what you just said, the resources, the natural resources. Look, there's actually a book, if I'm not mistaken, referred to. The title is called Resource Wars, and I saw it, and I said, man, I'm gonna get my hands on that. I have several, you know, pretty much the same, you know, but the title of that book really stands out. And if anybody serious and want to understand and know, okay, then get that book. Get that book. See these white apologists, these white boys who know deep down inside in their subconscious that, yeah, shit, my road dog days is up. You know what I'm saying? I'm writing about him. But push come to shove, I'm rolling with him. You see what I'm saying? But that's exactly what it is, though. That's exactly what it is. And you know, like the Republican rap, again, you know, with the land. You know, and what's underneath that shit. And if Africa sunk beneath the ocean tomorrow, they in trouble. But Russia now, Russia holding the cards. Russia holding the cards. And then they got China right there next door to them, got their back. And so the currency thing. And see, that's another thing. That's why I said earlier, like, you know, economics, okay, how we going to trade? You know, we trade in what kind of currency here, you know? And there's this desperateness. It's the same thing as you start seeing these battery powered cars now. You know, mother's getting these hybrids and whatnot. You know, I'm talking about like fancy, you know, like Porsche and all some of these sports cars. You could literally hear them coming out of the block. You could tell it's an electric car. So there's the desperate hours, this desperateness, this desperate attempt. You know what I'm saying? You know, to try to make this transference. We know it's a dark, is their end. But again, you know, when you look at economics, how we going to trade? And who we going to trade with? And over what? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, the U.S. dollar, U.S. currency is in trouble. U.S. dollar is in trouble. In bad, bad, bad shape. And people, and we talked about the last, we try to connect the dots, you know what I'm saying, with these wars and the currency thing, the petrol dollar, and how it drives people, how it drives things up, something like that, you know. But that's a classic example to get people to understand, though, that book, Resource Wars, and how this shit going to go. And so to try to go off into another type of currency, cryptocurrency. And you got a lot of brothers, you know, that's getting into that, you know what I'm saying, trading and stuff, they're getting into it. You see what I'm saying? So I'm going to close with this here. There's this white woman, can't think of her name, but she had what's called the Solari Index, and she used to work with her. She was with George Bushnell. And she had said, man, if she ain't know no better that crash, she said she'd have thought with the housing, she was directly targeting black people. She said that out of her own mouth. And so now she come up with this thing. She's trying to help these people who run into her now because she know the people she was no good. So she couldn't sleep no more now. So now she's coming out with it. You know what I'm saying? But that's just the way it looks. So I'm saying we have to look at the whole pie. And we can't leave nothing out because we don't be playing ourselves. But on that note, man, look, we say, you know, thanks to those who've been listening. And, you know, tune in same time, 7 p.m. Central Time. 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the In Defense of the People's Radio, brought to you by the People's Political Party. I'm your host, National Chairman of the People's Political Party, Nat Turner, and my co-host, you know, who own a surprise cruise, y'all, you know what I'm saying? And I don't mean to be putting his business out there, but, you know, he's living some, you know what I'm saying? Our Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and our... I'm trying to even find words to describe this sister. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, you know, I DJ on the ones and twos. You know what I'm saying? Our Minister of Communication, Sister Imani Oshun, man. We say Black Power and your Uhuru. You know what I'm saying? Word up. Tune in next week. Straight up.
All right, this young lady right there.
Now, you're right. But isn't it also possible that if the white people, the poor people, the people down in my neighborhood, the white people, those that don't work, those that are on welfare, those that have nothing, if they got together too, and you help us, we'll help you. You help us get up there. You help us get rid of some of these people that are pressing down on us.
No, I say you should be just as active in your neighborhood as we're trying, as you have been in our neighborhood.
Everybody's going for something. We alone, there are too few of us. There are too many men up there with all their cop cars and everything.
That's what they're always telling you. Never let your enemy tell you how many of you there are. Never let the man that you're against form your opinions. This is the trick that's played on everyone who's oppressed. The first thing an occupation, when you have a revolution in the country, the first thing you take over is the radio. And then you start telling the people that everybody, the war is over. And so all of them surrender. No, they believe that thing right there. And once they take that over, they start telling you where you are and where they are, and you fall right in line. It's plain thought control.